Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, we're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 35, although it says here 34. It's 34? But 35. This is a mistake. Okay, 16 and 17. So this is just after, it's in the pairs of verses in chapter 35. It's after the verse where the gopis are either addressing Mother Yashoda in person or thinking of her, of how the day has come towards its end and Krishna hasn't come back yet and she's worried, like mothers worry. Where's my son? He's late. So all of that expectation of meeting with her son. So they're pacifying her heart. So this is after that. When now they're just amongst themselves and they're freely expressing their conjugal affection for Krishna, the young gopis. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on these verses. In these verses, the gopis are no longer in the company of Mother Yashoda, so they freely describe their confidential conjugal attraction to Krishna. The gopis said, the soft touch of Krishna's lotus petal feet, marked with a conch, flag, and goad, pacifies Mother Earth from the pain she feels from the hooves of the cows returning to Vraja in the late afternoon. As Krishna walks with the gait of a maddened elephant, he agitates our hearts with lust by his playful glances, and thus we become stunned and immobilized like the trees. In our bewilderment, we fail to notice that the garlands in our hair and our garments are slipping off. On one hand, Krishna removes the distress of the earth, but for us, the beautiful browed gopis of Vraja, he agitates our minds by glancing at us with his beautiful lotus eyes. Such is our misfortune. Kind of contradictory, but that's, they can't check their emotion of attraction for Krishna, and that's their misfortune, they're saying. So here's a verse where this morning's verse is referenced in the next chapter 36. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. Is that right? My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokula, must be another chapter, later chapter. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokula, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed with anxiety of separation. Uddhava doubts. Since they have absorbed their minds in you, they have attained you. Why should you worry about them? Krishna's reply, internally they are absorbed in me, but externally they have become very disturbed. That is described in this verse. I believe this is the chapter where Krishna is encouraging Uddhava to go to, from Mathura to Goloka, or to Braja. As women of Gokula, They can maintain their lives only by seeing me. That is their extraordinary nature. The superlative degree in preshta, or dearest, indicates an object which surpasses all others. And he cites Panini, it's a Sanskrit rule book. Something is priya, or dear, which is the object of complete possessiveness. That is dear, or priyan, which is atma, or the entity identified as I. What's more dear to me? So I may think I'm this body, I may think I'm the mind, I may think I'm the soul, but whatever that is, that's what's dear to me. Priya. If there are many such objects, among them all, that which surpasses them all, which is dearer than all other things related to me, is dearest. Preshta. So Krishna's saying that the gopis hold me in that way, more than their body, than any other thing that may be dear to them. I am the most dear. Superlative. When I am close, they express sentiments like, we can eagerly look upon your beautiful face, so lovely, which is adorned with curly locks. However, now I'm far away. They remember that I am far away. I'm thinking about it, they faint. The muyanti. Muyanti means bewildered, and vimuyanti is very bewildered. They faint. They think for a short time and faint for a long time. Ah, what misfortune. They cannot even think of me. The present tense is used to show that repeatedly they think and faint. The cause of fainting is their exhaustion from longing in separation. They drool. This is a symptom of vyabhichari bhav called apasmara, or epileptic fit. They're pretty extreme, the gopis. Previously, they displayed various clear symptoms. There's this verse, such as, we are unaware of our hair and garments are slackening. We are unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. So this is chapter 35, but by the time he goes to Mathura, and it's matured from that period of time, they can't maintain their lives. However, now, with their extreme symptoms known everywhere, I am embarrassed to go there. In distress, Krishna calls out, Uddhava, you are like my limb. This gives courage to Uddhava to console the gopis. Could you go upstairs? There's a flash drive that is on the desk, and it's kind of bent in a right angle. It's chapter 46, I believe, not 36. In chapter 46, that's after Krishna has gone, you know, the departure of... We're going to read next Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, being carried in the chariot of Akura, and then what the gopis have to say. So that's chapter 22, which we're going to read next. Then he goes to Mathura. He kills Kamsa, etc. Ugrasena is installed on the throne. He's reunited with Vasudeva and Devaki. And now he's in Mathura. And he is contemplating The gopis. So this is where this section that we're reading from. And we just read why Krishna, do you remember what Krishna said? Why to Uddhava, why he doesn't go back? What did he say? Who can remember?
Because of the extreme feelings of distress of the gopis, he's embarrassed.
He's embarrassed. So now I'm going to read Jiva Goswami's commentary on the first verse of chapter 46. In sorrow, that's an ecstatic emotion, by the way. And the material one is not. Krishna's is, he's feeling sorrow. It's an ecstatic emotion. Jiva Goswami is saying, in sorrow with hopeless heart, I offer respect to Krishna, the only shelter for those suffering, to suffering people of Vraja, and to Uddhava, who alleviated their suffering. Having completed his preliminary duties, that's killing Kamsa and liberating Vasudeva and Devaki and Ugrasena and reuniting with the Yadu clan. Having completed his preliminary duties, worrying about the agony of the people of Vraja and his own promise to return made to the gopis and Nanda at his departure time, he said, and to Nanda he said, he made a promise. Krishna should have returned to Vraja, but he did not go. Because he could not take lightly the orders of Vasudeva. Vasudeva wanted him to stay. Vasudeva's father ordered him to stay to now protect against the demoniac rulers. Not only Kamsa is gone, but all the other people that would then attack. He didn't want to take lightly the orders of Vasudeva, who worried that if he went, he would not return to Mathura because of extreme attachment to Nanda and Yashoda. And then he quotes the verse from the previous chapter where he's saying to Nanda, now you should all return to Vraja, dear father. We shall come to see you, our dear relatives, who suffer in separation from us, as soon as we have given some happiness to your well-wishing friends. So he's got this dual strings pulling him. Affection over here and affection over there. You know what that one's like. But here's Krishna with that feeling. He had made the promise to return, but Nanda had not made a specific request. The elders of Mathura, however, desired that he protect the city. To ignore that request would be inauspicious for him. He also considered that he could not protect anyone from Jarasandha and others by going to Vraja, whereas he could do this by staying in the fort of Mathura. Complicated, you know, making decisions about this or that. This is Krishna's contemplation, compliments of Jiva Goswami. How does he know Krishna's mind? He then spoke to Uddhava in the next verse without Vasudeva hearing. Later he will say, gives the Sanskrit, this is chapter 82, and I'm not sure at that, anyway. My dear girlfriends, do you still remember me? I think this is in Kurukshetra. It was for my relative's sake that I stayed away so long, intent on destroying my enemies. This indicates that, among other causes, he stayed away to perform countless actions, such as defeating Jarasandha and other demons. If he did not do this, there would be calamity for both the Yadus and the people of Raja. In order to pretend indifference to the people of Raja, he did not call them to his side in Mathura. Sometimes there has been this question. Why didn't they go to Mathura? To Mathura? They, you know, it's so close. And why didn't Krishna call them? Why didn't he go there? You're like, there's this separation thing, so wasn't there a solution? So here's Jiva Goswami's answer. In order to pretend indifference to the people of Raja, he did not call them to his side in Mathura. There would also have been great difficulty in adjusting affectionate behavior with the two sets of parents simultaneously. In bringing the gopis to Mathura, and in not bringing them, there would both ways be problems. Thus, he already said that he would come to Braja. To his father, Nanda Maharaj. He did not say that he would call them to Mathura. He said he would come to see them. He did not say, you should come here. Thus, Nanda, though in great pain, did not leave Raja in order to see Krishna and Balaram in Mathura. That question has come up sometimes. Paragraph. It is also not suitable for Krishna to appear in both places at once when Jarasandha caused problems, because he could just expand himself and be in both places. No problem. Everybody's happy. Since Nanda would come to know of this and thus would lose his awareness that Krishna was his alone, and his affection for him would wane. There is the following principle, which is in chapter 46. This is now Uddhava speaking to the gopis. When her lover is far away, a woman thinks of him more than when he is present before her. This may be Shukadev speaking. Because of this, Krishna decided not to go to Braja at that time. Paragraph. In his aprakat form, however, Krishna remained in Braja at all times. This will be explained. Referring now to Canto 10, Chapter 4. This is Krishna in the prison house of Kamsa, speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki. Oh, fortunate couple, do not lament for your children who suffered because of their karmas, all jivas controlled by fate. Never stay in one place forever. The previous children that were killed. And then next chapter, 47. You are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Krishna in his letter to the gopis. Like really delicate. However, those participating in the prakat pastimes are not aware of this. That is, Krishna is the soul of all creatures and all creation. If in the prakat pastimes he were to appear secretly at some time in Braja, this would not create faith in those with strong longing, because a temporary manifestation would only cause disturbance. Like he's going to go again. Therefore, it is described in Padma Purana and hinted at in the Bhagavatam that he would return permanently only after killing Dantavakra. He did not come until the time when he would personally be able to stay. Paragraph. Last paragraph of this introductory verse to chapter 46. He thought that sending Balaram to solve the problems without himself coming would also cause suffering. He indicated that Uddhava was his dear friend, equal to himself. Uddhava would console the people of Raja, creating faith by giving some false instructions and letting them hear of his powers as a great king. Two chapters are dedicated to describing this pastime in order. Okay, now we're going back to chapter 35. So, next section is Jiva Goswami in his Krishna Sandarbha, 177, where it's, the topic is, the chapter 22 comes after chapter 11. It's the gopis doing the Katyayani Vrata. So here's text 4. Translation from the BBT. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra. Quote, O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. And Jiva Goswami's commentary goes like this. Being the husband is the complete condition for the gopis. This determination of the gopis with spotless love should be fulfilled by the Lord. He personally accepted them. He states, their desire was fulfilled. Chapter 22, text 27. Go now, girls, and return to Braja. Your desire is fulfilled, for in my company, you will enjoy the coming nights. Rasalila, now we're in chapter 35. This is the daytime after the nighttime, the Rasalila period. After all, this was the purpose of your vow, to worship Goddess Katyayani, O pure-hearted ones. And he goes on, in all cases, the desired attainment, defined as ultimate, should agree with the conclusions of Rasa scriptures. Remember our discussions last couple of days about what the Rasa scriptures, that the poet people and the drama people and the dance people speak about rasa, because there's a purpose to all of that in transcendental reality, and then even in worldly reality there's the reflection or the material counterpart, the shadow of reality. So these texts, Jiva Goswami is saying, they should be in agreement with Rasa scriptures. That's their desired attainment. So that they want to be Krishna's wife. All ancient and modern scholars, mundane and spiritual, have described it in this way. And then that is, it should be fulfilled in terms of marriage, not just dancing at night. Rupa Goswami, also in the act called fulfillment of desires in the Lita Madhava, has shown this. We discussed this. It's not something that's spoken of often because it's not explicitly described in the Bhagavatam, but Rupa Goswami describes it in his Lita Madhava, that the gopis, at least expansions of the gopis, and it's hard to describe, but more than saying that, they became wives of Krishna and Dwarka. His promise was fulfilled. That's what's being stated. And in Ujjvala Nilamani, that's again Rupa Goswami's writing, had concluded this in Sambhoga. Sambhoga means meeting, complete enjoyment, full of all rasa. So let's do it again. There's this exalted position within the Bhagavatam and Lord Chaitanya and the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the super excellent position of the gopis. And the gopis had this aspiration. Krishna made his promise and he's going to fulfill it. But how he's going to fulfill it is not in Vrindavan. The highest form of love is this love in separation. And then there's the love in meeting that takes place in Dwarka. So there's expansions, or however the proper way to look at it is, according to Rasa Shastra. And it should be. That's what's being said here. There was a question the other day about, you know, Satyabhama and Radha and Rukmini and Chandravali. And so each one of the 16,108 gopis are, according to Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, they're the counterparts of the gopis in Braja. Very profound. It's 501 literature. I don't recommend that you go, oh, I want to read that one and find out how that works. He goes on. This is also indicated in Bhagavatam as follows, quoting chapter 47. This is now Uddhava to the gopis. Or in his letter, Krishna's letter. The actual reason why I, the beloved object of your sight, have stayed far away from you is, yet another reason, I wanted to intensify your meditation upon me and thus draw your minds closer to me. Mission accomplished. Then, later in that same chapter, 47, oh, unfortunate ladies, although some gopis had to remain in the cowherd village and so could not join the rasa dance to sport with me at night in the forest, they attained me by thinking of my potent pastimes. Now, acharyas have a lot of fun, or, you know, going. Those that did go, they went to their spiritual form and they left behind a Maya form. So it didn't look like there was any, you know, mischief going on. But there were those that were restrained and were unable to go. And I can't remember the language that was used precisely, but something along the line that they still had some residual purification to undergo. And it was that anticipation of meeting Krishna that enabled them to surpass that remaining obstacle, and they attained Krishna's association that way, by remembrance of him. Meeting in an illicit way is always filled with obstacles. Therefore, it is not approved in Rasa scripture as the ultimate spiritual goal. So the obstacles were overcome by they went in their spiritual form. But nonetheless, they, you know, there, to get to that stage, there was, the obstacle, and addressing the obstacle and being constrained by their own shyness, by being constrained by principles of Dharma, by being constrained physically by their duties at home, etc. The millions of gopis in Vraja filled with Mahabhava found it most difficult previously to hide their feelings. And now the verses that we are reading, 16, 17. Quote, as Krishna strolls through Vraja with his lotus petal-like feet, marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elephant gold, he relieves the distress of the ground from the cow's hooves. He plays his renowned flute. His body moves slowly with the gait of an elephant. Thus we gopis who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us, stand as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. Paragraph. In long separation, the feelings became intense. This is now Akura in his Taking Krishna from Vrindavan. Let us directly approach Madhava to stop him from going. This is the gopis when Akura has come. Let us directly approach Madhava and stop him from going. What can our family, elders, and other relatives do to us? Chapter 39. They forgot all shame and loudly cried out, O Govinda, O Damodar, O Madhava. Sound familiar? That's where it comes from. Next chapter 46. Those gopis are always absorbed in me. Back now to Krishna speaking to Uddhava. And their very lives are ever devoted to me. Next chapter 47. Thus speaking, the gopis whose words, bodies, and minds were fully dedicated to Govinda put aside all their regular work now that Krishna's messenger Uddhava had arrived among them. Constantly remembering the activities of their beloved Krishna had performed in his childhood and youth, they sang about them and cried without shame. Pretty intense. The residents of Vrindavan are very special, and we're getting a picture of some of these features of their special quality. Now, specifically because this is chapter 35, this is the gopis and their remembrance of Krishna. But what's in their hearts and what's in Krishna's heart towards them, not only them, but all the residents of Braja. I mean, the cows are very dear to Krishna. The cowherd boyfriends are very dear to Krishna. The river Jamuna is very dear to Krishna. The hill of Govardhan is very dear to Krishna. His mother and father and the elder cowherds, and it's like a festival of sweet exchanges and Krishna very expertly navigating all of this. And then there's his pastimes outside of Vrindavan. That's important. It's his promise to the demigods and his promise to his father and mother and the necessity of killing the demons, and it's a tug of war. You know, from a rasa point of view, it's just intensifying his feelings through his dear devotees and intensifying their feelings because he's torn in different ways. Just like, we heard, you know, when Queen Kunti's prayers, Krishna's returning to Dwarka and she's in anxiety. If he returns, then we'll be missing him. And if he doesn't return, my relatives will be missing him. And she's torn between the two families. So she's praying, please take away this affinity for family. The material portion of affinity. And leave only the spiritual portion of affinity. Because her love is very singular and focused. Or we heard, Yudhisthira fully recognizing Krishna's divinity, and, you know, again and again and again and again and again, Krishna exhibiting it and his recognizing it, Draupadi's calamities and Krishna's coming and helping them, and like Grandfather Bhishma says, in so many ways, so many difficulties, but every time Krishna was there and protected you. So the difficulty is not zero. Difficulty is substantial, but Krishna is always there. So he knew Krishna's divinity, but because of his affection, he sent armies to go protect Krishna as he travels back to Dwarka. I mean, it's a festival of loving exchange. And Krishna's enjoying. And there's so many varieties of his enjoying at different levels of his enjoying. The intimacy, the sweetness of Raja, etc., the majesty in Dwarka. I mean, who can imagine what it would be like for the resident of Dwarka, or the queens, or the resident of Dwarka? Krishna comes out of his palace and emerges into one Krishna, gets in a chariot and goes to this assembly hall, and then goes back and expands himself into so many Krishnas. Like, how do they process that? But he did it, and it was a daily affair, and who knows how many years he did that. And it's not like the residents of Vrindavan, they can see those things and they just, like, it bounces. Water off a duck's back, as the expression goes. They saw it. They had some acknowledgement of his divinity, and yet they're engaging as his wife and children and elders, and they have their relationship and they're recognizing his divinity. They're, you know, they had a unique qualification, a unique disposition of heart, but Krishna was at the center of everything. Amazing. When Samba was captured by Duryodhana, Ugrasena was informed, they didn't know where he was. When he found out, he was going to take the entire Yadu army and go and smash Duryodhana. Balaram said, no, let me play peacemaker. Because he was good at it. And he had like a disposition for being the peacemaker. So he went to do the peacemaker work, and they didn't send the army. Anyway, so many. So then Duryodhana, when it came known, oh, Balaram, what can we do? Will he have Samba marry your daughter and send her back with me to Dwarka? Door's locked. Don't mess with Balaram. Okay, here. So, unlimited potency in the hands of Krishna and Balaram, and investing similar amazing potency in his devotees, their devotees. And then there are different exchanges of loving dealings. Kings being killed, demons being killed, and this and that, because that's the secondary reason, although it's the, you know, one of the three primary reasons in Bhagavad Gita, but the essence of Krishna's pastimes is loving exchanges to attract our hearts and mind. And then what to speak of getting this, like, inside picture by our acharyas of what Krishna's feelings and contemplations are. How confidential is that? In his dealings with the gopis, how's Krishna considering and feeling, deciding? Ooh. And then we finish, we go back to, you know, go to work and report in and do your occupational duties. Perform your prescribed duties and always remember Krishna. The real story is you give up your occupational duties and just do this all day. That's not our program. The verse that Lord Chaitanya accepted is the goal of life and the means to achieve it is stay in your position, let go of the tendency to speculate, and just engage in hearing and chanting topics of Krishna and let your hearts go to Krishna. And by a gradual cleansing, gradual purification method. Now, we shouldn't be complacent. Okay, gradual, fantastic. We should be eager. We should be very enthusiastic. That's in the hearing and chanting activity. And the application is, you know, according to our nature, principles to live by, and attraction for Krishna, principles to live by, and live by theistic conduct in our worldly duties in the home and outside the home and in the marketplace and in the workplace and in the world. And that's what we do. Eagerly developing, through hearing and chanting, attraction for the goal. Eager, however far away we are, in humility, doesn't negate enthusiasm. Humility, proper humility, encourages enthusiasm. It elevates enthusiasm to the hearing and chanting activity and recognizing how far we are. I was appreciating this from Rabindra Sarup Prabhu's presentation on chanting. That, you know, secretly he was recognizing, I'm really far from feeling happy. But I didn't tell anybody. Because, like, it was embarrassment. But then when he read Shikshastakam, Lord Chaitanya's, of course, our experience of embarrassment and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dānya, humility, and grief at not attaining that which is attainable through the process, that's a bona fide emotion. That was what he was expressing. But, you know, let that become elevated and purified, and just so our little feeble humility and grief that, you know, I'm way down here, and gosh, how's that going to ever become other than way down here? And this is so high. So stay with the process, because the process is very pure. Let it amplify your eagerness, although there's humility. They're not contradictory. Spiritual humility is not contradictory to emotion and eagerness. That's true for the chanting process. It's true for our great acharyas. I'll just end with this. The first time I visited Puri, first time we conducted a yatra in Puri, I had not spent extended time there, but in preparing for the Puri yatra, there was this very distinct, predominant feeling, appreciation, and that is the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had these two qualities, profound humility and indomitable enthusiasm. And one didn't cancel the other. Our humility is too tiny compared to their humility. We just like get discouraged or something. Their humility was profound. Like they wouldn't even think of going into the temple. Or Sanatana Goswami, he wouldn't even walk in front of the temple. Because he considered himself to be a contaminated person with sores on his body, and the Brahmins may touch my body and I'll contaminate them and make an offense to Jagannath. So he walked along the beach to go visit Lord Chaitanya. And while he was walking on the beach, it was midday, the sand was hot, his feet were blistered, he didn't even feel it. Lord Chaitanya was astonished. But that was that kind of humility. But his eagerness carried him beyond even feeling pain. Like, that's otherworldly. We feel pain. Your feet burn. You feel it. He wasn't feeling it. Because of his enthusiasm to, Lord Chaitanya is calling me. You're not thinking, oh, that's the way it should be because I'm an elevated Vaishnava. No. No. Profound humility. Inspiring. Indomitable enthusiasm. So that's seems contrasting, and it's an important combination for us to cultivate also. Here we are hearing these super elevated things, and we're way down here. And so I've been hearing this, and it's been part of the discussion in the room, you know, during questions and answers, and outside also, like, whoa, this is really up there. But it tells us about elevated Vaishnavas and the heart of Krishna. How fortunate to have that association, to have that sound vibration. Who understands these things? Who even has a hint about these things? We're so fortunate. Become purified by hearing this good fortune being coming in the form of sound, and let your consciousness feel humility and lots of enthusiasm. Let it grow and grow by the Bhagavad Dharma process. Let's see if there's some discussion. Anyone in the room would like to speak something? There's some behind you.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. I mean, I was just appreciating, these kind of questions that come in our mind. I mean, Jiva Goswami and the Acharyas, they very directly answered those in the explanations, thinking about what the future people would be looking for answers. I was just appreciating when you were reading about why gopis did not, why Krishna did not come, or what are the various reasons that Krishna did not go to Gokula or Vrindavan. So,
there's one more that I came across, and I went back to look for it and couldn't find it, but it's there in my notes somewhere. Krishna was considering, if I go to Braja, this is in Mathura, if I go back to Braja to be with my dear friends and the Vrijbasis, then the remaining demons will know I have affection for them, and they'll harass them. So I can't go. Multiple. He's the Supreme Lord. He can just like squish them and they're gone. Pastime. Go ahead.
One quick question. I have some tolerance level. I mean, when it comes to tolerance, I mean, there is some level, but beyond that, if something happens, maybe I get triggered.
Yeah.
So, I was just trying to understand, especially when the things are in our control and we are not able to do anything.
The things are in your control?
Maybe in our control. We think that they're in our control, but we are not able to.
Thank you for that modification.
That is when, is it because of, trying to compare with the situation or the other person that I am better than the other person, why should I be, is that the reason? I was thinking this controllership and then the lack of humility, comparing with, is that the reasons that...
That's one of them. You know, I like the, because it's expressed repeatedly, I like the word acceptance. In the Dhruva pastime, there's three times he hears it. And, from his mother, from Narada, from Swayambhuva Manu. Acceptance doesn't mean you've just become a blob. But acceptance means there's a reality out there that's Krishna's arrangement. So I honor Krishna's arrangement, But now, what's appropriate for me to do? So you're now in this space of being Krishna's devotee and trying to recognize Krishna, please give me the intelligence and the strength and the wisdom to know how to best address the circumstance. And then you have, all your options are open. Including just like waiting. Including whatever, you know, raising your voice. But it's not in triggered manner. It's in the mode of a servant of Krishna, what's appropriate for the circumstance. Maybe that's appropriate. Now, we're not acharya-like, so we should be cautious about the exhibition of anger in Krishna's service. Because we'd be controlled by anger rather than the other way. But that's the striving for that position is helped very much. It's mode of goodness kind of acceptance. And then go to transcendence. This world is Krishna's creation. And there's a living entity over there, or right in front of me, or whatever it is, that is a hurtful person. And the behavior is a hurtful behavior, or speech or something. So now, that's the reality, and I accept it. Now what, in service to Krishna? So it's there's steps, and once those steps have you gone through them many, many times, it becomes just 1, 2, 3. It happens quickly, almost like spontaneously, because that's the place that you're living your life from. You're navigating your world through this complex material field, duality, as Krishna's servant. It is Kali Yuga, it's not Satya Yuga. People have bad qualities and so forth and so on. So, and as do I. Now, I'm accepting that's the circumstance that I'm the architect of. The circumstance will be different for a different person or a different person, but here I am. This is my circumstance. Now, I'm accepting responsibility for my circumstance. Now, how to best be in service to Krishna? You just practice at that again and again, and it becomes how you live your life. And we're not there yet. Always. I mean, to some degree, sometimes, and then like you say, then you get triggered. Then there's a threshold. Okay. Then you stay with it. Like, not just bite the bullet, but you tolerate so that you can be in the mode of goodness rather than the mode of reaction. And practice it. With strength and conviction. That's our life. That's what we do with those kinds of circumstances. Take support from others, from hearing and chanting, etc. And keep moving along that path. And that doors open that you didn't see before. When you're in the reactive mode, you don't see doors. You're just like blind, covered, dull. Using Rabindra's word, stupid. Okay, so anything else in the room?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have this question regarding position of...
Could you turn the speaker gopis towards me? Go ahead.
The position of gopis, like gopis are... eternally with Krishna in
Krishna Loka.
Krishna Loka, and they came. How about others like gopas or cows or others who were around Krishna in Vrindavan? Are they also, they all also came or they had to do austerity or something?
There's two categories. There's a more complex, but a simple explanation is, there's Nitya Siddha devotees. They're there in Krishna's unmanifest eternal pastimes in this world and in Krishna Loka, And when it's time for Krishna's appearance, they appear in various, various ways. So the cows and the peacocks and the everything, they appear. And these are the Nitya Siddha devotees. They take part in Krishna's pastimes. And after some time, those pastimes become unmanifest, and they're continuing to perform those pastimes in their unmanifest state because their bodies don't deteriorate because they have spiritual form. But sometimes you can see, sometimes you cannot see. Then there's a second category, which is what you're asking. There's some that are sadhana siddhas. And for sadhana siddhas, what Prabhupada has taught us is, they don't just directly go back to Godhead, but they go to take part in Krishna's pastimes wherever they're taking place, and they're like an apprentice program, getting trained up by the Nitya Siddhas. He doesn't use that language, but they're getting trained how to do their various duties. And they're happy. They're not like, hey, I want to go. They're in Krishna's association, being guided by. There's always being guided by. There's never a point where we're not guided by. Does that answer your question? An example of this is found, you can read, you'll find it in Krishna book. The Rishi Chari Gopis. You're familiar with that terminology. So, they went from Ram's Leela to Krishna's Leela. And there is a certain segment amongst the gopis that are being trained by the Nitya Siddha gopis. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. It's so overwhelming last time when you came it was gopi conversations, and now it is like I could not stay at home. Today is my holiday, so I ran and I left everything there. So now I feel like I have to go back and do this. But until then I never went in my brain, nothing. So it was so heart-touching, the way you're explaining the stuff and everything. Maharaja, I'm a dancer. I'm a Kuchipudi dancer.
Ah.
So I did something like Rukmini Kalyanam. So it is all of Bhava Prakatana of the Rukmini, how she is longing for the, and the letter from the Krishna. She wrote a letter to Krishna and everything. So I could do that. And there is one more thing, Narayaniyam. So in that, Narasimha Bhagavan, the Raudram. So, what all I could see in your lectures, like you're talking about Vipralamba Bhava.
Yeah.
It was imaginable, like, I can't even predict, like, what is that Bhava and everything. So I could not, like, Rasa, Bhava and Prema. Rasa we know, like there are, what I learned from Kuchipudi is like there are seven kinds of rasas, and the bhava is the rasa is the rasa is the thing, like it is what I learned from my gurus about rasa, bhava and prema is like nowhere.
Prema is what?
In prema we never
discussed
prema. So we had only bhava and rasa.
Okay.
So bhava is the one, is the dancer's mood, and the rasa is we predict to our bhavas. And then it becomes sanchari. It's a storyline. So these are all I learned, but when I came to your lectures, I really could relate the things more and more than just doing it. So I could express all those things, but Vipralamba, I never did it. So I want to do it. I feel like doing it. So, what?
What is it? Vipralamba is your question?
Vipralamba is like something like love in separation.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'll say three things. Put your microphone down. something that I read, you probably heard it. Jiva Goswami explains there are four different pictures on rasa. You spoke one, and there's three others. You know, bhava is the actor, and rasa is what is created by the actor. And it can be in the audience and whatever. So that's one picture. There's multiple pictures. That's one point. And, you know, naturally, because you had a teacher, you hear from your teacher, you accept that's the picture. But you can also know there are other pictures. And Rupa Goswami says that any strength that comes from what you just described comes from the source of all rasa. According to the Vedas, the Shruti portion of the Vedas, rasa vaisaha. Krishna is rasa. So it's connected to Krishna. Recognized or not recognized, whatever strength is over there is because Krishna is rasa. He's an ocean of rasa. So now, specific to your question about Vipralamba, there's no question of Vipralamba without Sambhoga. or it's just, you make it simpler, just say yoga. Without connection, there's no sense of disconnection. Let's say materialists, they don't have a sense of disconnection because they have no sense of connection. It's a whole other world, and you enter into the world of connection or yoga, and then there's this anticipation of meeting the object that you're trying to connect with. That's the feeling. Now, and there's degrees of that feeling, and that the highest exhibition of that those feelings are the residents of Vraja. When Krishna goes, it's not just the gopis go mad, everyone goes mad. The cows go mad. And etc. The cowherd boys. They've been with Krishna nonstop and he's leaving. They go mad. So that's Vipralamba. But Krishna stays. He enters in their heart. So that's this. Then a third point is, even in this stage of attachment, you know, prema, beyond asakti is prema. Beyond asakti is bhava, and beyond bhava is prema. Bhava, according to Rupa Goswami and this whole literature, the vast literature about rasa, is, it's like waves, and when the waves mix, then it becomes rasa and prema. Prema rasa. The rasa, in a simple dictionary definition, is its juice. Like, you know, the essence of something, the essence of a fruit is its juice. And it's tasty. So that's rasa. Prema rasa is, it's the mixing of different waves. It's the ocean that has many waves and sometimes and sometimes and sometimes and sometimes. And that's what prema is. If you want to read some literature, Madhurya Kandamani describes prema. The last section. Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So the gopis, once they have that specifically described, when they're meeting with Krishna, they're in anxiety because he's going to leave. They're feeling vipralamba even when they're meeting with Krishna. There's no peace. Shanti, shanti, shanti. No shanti. It's waves of prema rasa. Even when they're meeting. But it's an ecstasy. It's a mysterious ecstasy. So is that, just send her that section from Madhurya Kandamani and she can read it without having to wait. It's available in digital form and she'll just cut and paste and send it to you. Okay. Okay. Pass the microphone up this way.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. What Sundarilila Mataji was sharing, I can totally relate in terms of even though this subject matter is so elevated, but how you're carefully and slowly narrating them really pulls us. Even I have a day off today and I just felt the pull to come and hear it in person.
I wondered how you're able to come. Okay.
So as you're describing, as I'm understanding that these subject matters are so elevated, I'm so down here, my thoughts were going that most of the time we are controlled by the modes.
Yeah.
And Maya, you know, is attacking us. So I was thinking, is it important to recognize that that we're being attacked?
Yeah.
Because somebody was recently telling me when we're having like negative thoughts about devotees, we're doubting the process, that means Maya is attacking you. They were explaining like that.
Yeah.
So when we are being pulled and pushed like that, it's so strong. And I feel like it drags me down.
Understood. Now?
What, you know, how can I
get out of that space?
Divert. Yes. It's,
well, there's what you can do in the moment and what you can do longer, you know, beyond the moment. Both things. Let's start with what you do beyond the moment, and that is with faith, because it's all, everything's spiritual progress starts with faith. And faith is nurtured by sadhusanga, and sadhusanga is nurtured by bhajana kriya. So you do those things with faith that this will, two things, purify and lift me. You awaken spiritual consciousness and diminish my affinity for matter. That's long term. So strength, intelligence, higher consciousness. And then you can look at what matter is doing around you, and it doesn't have the same impact or effect upon you as it did before that elevation of consciousness and cleansing. So you do that, continue with faith and in good association and proper, you know, conduct as best you can within limitations or our own limitations. And then comes the in the moment. So one of the terms that I use a lot is the big picture. So pause, step back from that moment experience, the event, the person, the words, the behaviors. Step back in this reflective mode of goodness space. And you look at the big picture. I mean, if, again, by practice, it's just part of what you do. It's just part of what you do. Big picture. Here I am. And here's this, you know, here I'm in the material world, and here's an event in the moment, in my sojourn through the material world that I take responsibility for. You know, there's an instrument over here, but I take responsibility for that coming my way because that's why it's coming my way. Some actions, some decisions, something, and it's happening the way that it's happening because of I'm responsible. I accept responsibility. And now I want to become better servant of Krishna, instrument of Krishna, how to navigate my way through the consequences of my past deeds. I want to choose the path of, so it's not, you know, I'm speaking some words that when in the moment there's this tendency to react to the moment. Sometimes, like this earlier question, I get triggered. So there is an option, and we opt for the option. That's this respond. And I'm describing steps in responding. So you can go back and listen to all the Dhruva Maharaj react and respond topic 3 times and get some principles, and you apply those principles. And you'll fail often because, as you said, you know, it's got a tight grip. And you know, and I fail a lot, and you know, I only get, you know, I never get a 10. I maybe get a 2 or 3. But, and that's only sometimes. And so, just stay the course. Learn the art of transcendence in the face of duality. And we're not only caught in duality, we're attached to it. It's us. It looks like reality, especially when you're in the midst of it and see, you're triggered by it. It's like, that's it. And I gotta, you know, fight or flight. I've gotta do something. And we forget who, yeah, everything. Forget everything. So you just practice mode of goodness. It's not reality. What's reality? And I'm caught in this illusion and triggered by it. And there's an emotion connected to it now. What are my options? And you just practice it in the moment. And you know, don't have to like give a report card how well you're doing in the course of a day or week. But you can consider this decision making and how we act or how we speak. And how, is it aligned with my values? And if not, what's impelled it? And you just do some reality check and, you know, collaborate with somebody else that you're helping you to monitor, and they can help you with spiritual support to make the course correction in the, you know, where you get a 0 instead of a 2 or whatever. So just the step by step, because it's practical. Krishna consciousness is not just notional, it's practical. And what you're bringing up and what he was bringing up is in the practical realm. We get carried away by, you know, illusion and our attachment to illusion. And we want spiritual life. That's a value. We're not necessarily behaving according to our values. And we're seen victim of, you know, the illusion. We're not. We bought into it, but we don't have to be. So it's a cultivation. That's what Rupa Goswami teaches, or Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Nectar Devotion. Bhakti is a sort of cultivation. That's what it is. As we're speaking, is cultivation. And Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam is the summary of that sort of cultivation phrase. And that's what we do. That Krishna is to be pleased. That's the engine that drives. It's the power that moves a life of devotion, out of being trapped in illusion by wanting to please Krishna. You know, then there's all kinds of ways of aligning that with our values, with our behaviors and our emotions, that responding to our conditioning and illusion. And I'm looking at my watch and it's almost 9 o'clock and we didn't even do any of the questions that are online. But I think we should call an end to the class. Although you have a day off. It's a mandatory day off, right? Mandatory day off?
Yes,
some people have schedules like that. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.